Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Yeah. Nice to be with you.
Woo.
Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Hello, my friend.
Did I miss last night? I know there were a lot of doubleheaders last night.
Yeah.
Is there a chance, tell me, Sean, that I missed that there was an Astros doubleheader and that
no,
they actually did clinch in the second doubleheader?
Yeah, they played at midnight last night. They're like, you know what? Tomorrow's a good day to just do nothing. Let's get this game out of the way, and then we'll come back here on Wednesday. That would be great.
I was so excited. I had it all set up. I was going to watch the Bills game on Monday Night Football because they're playing the Jaguars, the Texans' next opponent. I was excited to see how wrong I was about Josh Allen, et cetera, et cetera. I sat down. I turned the game on, and, oh, it's 14-0 already.
Yeah.
13-0. 13-0.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize. I forgot about the whole doubleheader scenario last night.
Do you like that? Do you like the Monday night? Do you like the Monday night doubleheader? Like the way they do the doubleheader on Monday night? It used to be that there was a first game that was early and there was a second game that was late. I remember back in 2013 going to one of the late ones because it involved the Houston Texans. Back in 2013, there was an early game and then the Texans played the then San Diego Chargers. Kids, at one time the Los Angeles Chargers played in San Diego and the Texans played a late Monday night game. Now, for whatever reason, they start one of them at like 6:30. Like I did not know that the Bills and the Jags were starting earlier. I knew there were two games, but I didn't. I guess I had forgotten or I didn't check. My brain was all over the place yesterday. I didn't check, and I turn on ESPN, and yeah, it's already 13-0. It's like, oh, okay. Well, this Buffalo is doing to Jacksonville what it's done to its other two opponents to start the season. So I like it. I wish they staggered the games so I could pay attention to both games. You know, I wish they'd start the early one, maybe even start it a little earlier. Start it at like 5:30 or something like that for us, and then start the late one at like 8:30, and I'll catch the first half of that one and go to bed. But do you like the old doubleheader?
I don't. I don't like it at all. As a matter of fact, I think that I struggle to wonder exactly why they're doing it. Can I ask you, who was in the booth with Orlovsky last night? Was that Lewis Riddick?
It was Lewis Riddick, yeah.
I felt the energy was off. That was one of the bigger things was, all right, if it's Monday Night Football, let me tune in and get a Monday Night Football experience. And I felt that I was robbed of a Monday Night Football experience last night.
Do you like Orlovsky?
What's that?
Do you like Orlovsky?
I like Orlovsky, yeah. I like Orlovsky. You got to kind of separate, like, okay, hot take Orlovsky that you see on ESPN, where I feel like they try a little too hard sometimes. But I think Orlovsky, the broadcaster, yeah, I admire his enthusiasm. I think he gives you an informed take on things, all of that. There's some kind of mismatch there with the energy. And then who's doing the play-by-play?
Fowler. Chris Fowler.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was Fowler?
Yeah.
Yeah, I found myself wanting more. I don't know. And I used to like, or maybe it's the mix of the play-by-play and Lewis Riddick and Dan Orlovsky. Because I used to like Lewis Riddick paired up with Dan Orlovsky. It didn't work for me last night.
Yeah, Fowler, it's a little like Herb Street on Amazon. I just equate Fowler with college football, you know?
And well,
same with Herb Street.
There's something. Fowler, he was making some really good points, I thought, honestly. I thought he picked up some good things in the moment and everything. But there is something to the college guys doing a pro game where they just don't have the same level of familiarity with what's going on.
Yeah.
And it bleeds through. I don't think it's even a technical thing or anything. I think it's just the way it ends up sounding. Remember when you're, did you ever have a moment where the principal would come in and teach a class like in an emergency situation?
Yeah.
They couldn't find a substitute?
Yeah.
I was always kind of like, ugh. This is not his thing, man.
Oh, no, yeah.
This is not his thing.
This is
just
guy that's
something
leading,
a little bit.
This guy that's leading our school, huh? What's
right,
going
well,
on?
Well, I know there's Mr. Almondsberger. I liked him. I thought he was a bright enough guy. I think he was good in what he did. But just when it came to being a substitute teacher, it wasn't his deal.
Yeah.
That's how I felt with Chris Fowler in NFL football.
I'll tell you my big takeaway from this Jags-Bills game last night. And for those who, if you're just waking up, the Bills, I mean, just destroyed the Jaguars. 47-10, the final score. They scored touchdowns on their first five possessions in the first half. They scored touchdowns on all of them. The Bills did. Trevor Lawrence was awful. Trevor Lawrence threw one of the worst interceptions, maybe the worst interception of the season. Just completely sailed the ball to a wide open Brian Thomas. DeMar Hamlin gets an interception. So that, you know, that it was just, it was a bad game. The other game, Washington beat Cincinnati 38-33 in Cincinnati. Cincinnati's 0-3 now. So to me, there's takeaways from both of these games relative to the Texans. Cincinnati being 0-3 makes me thankful that the Texans are 2-1. Like, you can play bad football and be 0-3 like the Bengals are, or you can play bad to mediocre football and be 2-1 like the Texans are. The Texans have not played great football, so they've survived these first three games, unlike a lot of teams. Look at the list of 1-2 teams, and it's got a bunch of teams that think they're Super Bowl teams this year. But the first game, the Jags-Bills game, man, I'm watching this game and I'm going, the Texans better win this Jags game on Sunday, because this Bills team is a machine. Like, if you imagine if they lose, imagine if the Texans lose this game on Sunday to the Jags, which would be just a disaster. Losing to an 0-3. By the way, the last time Trevor Lawrence beat an NFL team as a starting quarterback, Week 12 last season in Houston. So the Texans are the last team that Trevor Lawrence has beat. They beat the Texans to move to 8-3 on the season. They went 1-5 the rest of the year, and the only win was C.J. Beathard starting that game. Trevor Lawrence has not won a game since that game against the Texans last year. You lose to an 0-3 Jags team this Sunday, and if they play like they did the Texans, like they did on Sunday against the Vikes, they will lose to a bad Jags team if they play that way.
They will. They're capable of losing.
They're capable of losing.
It's possible, yeah.
If they lose that game, now you got the Bills coming to town, and they look They look unstoppable right now. And then after that, you got two road games. You got at New England and at Green Bay. And don't tell me right now that the way the Texans played this past Sunday, that they're not capable of losing either of those games as well on the road.
They were very much, I mean, after that Bengals game, it's hard not to think, wow, have they made any progress at all really since their playoff loss to the Ravens? Because that's what it looked like. It looked like they were completely out of their weight class. And the biggest thing, honestly, I'll go back to the Jeff Van Gundy quote. Do not ignore in victory what you would address in defeat. I think there was a lot of that going on in the first 2 weeks, because you commit 12 penalties in the second week versus the Bears and manage to win. And maybe you delude yourself as a team a little too much into thinking like, so look at how good we are. We play sloppy and we're fine. We still win. We still have a victory. I think this is the week where hopefully as a team they realize, man, we got to dial it up. And I hope we know the offensive line doesn't watch football on television, or at least Titus Howard and Laremy Tunsil, because it took them completely by surprise that the illegal formation by the offensive lineman is a point of emphasis this year, where most of the football viewing public learned that on Thursday Night Football, the first game of the season.
Correct.
So it was a surprise to them. Let's leave the offensive line out of this right now, because we can talk multiple times today about how Laremy Tunsil absolutely needs to be benched for at least a game. But the team overall just can't shoot itself in the foot like this and have any chance at all of beating the Bills.
Right.
I mean, they will get embarrassed to an extreme degree if they go out and play the same way they did on Sunday versus the Buffalo Bills. So maybe in the grand scheme of things, it worked out for the best that the Texans had some reality injected into their veins this past week. Get right versus the Jaguars. Play your asses off. Have a complete game. Beat a team emphatically. And then you can have a shot at the Bills. But yeah, this team has to make an improvement starting today or tomorrow at practice over what they did over the first 3 weeks if they want to have any chance at all versus the Bills.
Yeah, this Jags game is massively important on Sunday just because of what we watched last night. You've got it. That's a bad Jags team right now. That's a team. The Texans could get Doug Peterson fired this weekend if they play their A game. If Jacksonville has looked horrible the first 3 weeks, Jacksonville coughed up a huge lead in week one to Miami. They lost to Deshaun Watson in week two, and they got embarrassed on national TV last night. This is, you know, across the NFL, like I said, there's all these 0-3 and 1-2 teams. That's a bad 0-3 team right now. Like, that is a bad football. You have to destroy them on Sunday.
You must.
Yes.
You must. You have no choice.
Yes.
But to resoundingly defeat them and get your run game going somehow, some way.
Yes.
All of this talk about you know, cover two defense and how much there is around the league, et cetera, et cetera. This is not even a, this is not a hyper analytical, just any kind of a discussion about, you know, new age play calling versus old. This is a story as old as time. When defenses show you cover two, run the football. That's what the analytics nerds would tell you. The ones that hate runs, just run the football. And yet the Texans are incapable of running the football right now. And that goes back to, man, I sent you a clip last night of Laremy Tunsil on one run play where Cam Akers was tackled by a guy that...
Dude, it's
that
infuriating.
Laremy Tunsil simply just decided to stop blocking on
it's
a run
infuriating.
Play.
It's offensive.
He just stopped blocking. And then the biggest thing with Laremy Tunsil, you can tell by his body language, zero embarrassment or shame over the fact that his guy just got a tackle because he simply stopped blocking. You know, I don't care how good he is as a pass protector. At this point, put Blake Fisher in there. Sink or swim Blake Fisher. Give him a chance to impress or something. Because Laremy Tunsil is... it's cancerous. Yeah. It's cancerous when that's a guy who's a captain, the guy that's other guys on the team are supposed to be looking up to. He has zero accountability for... I mean, going back, this is years now. This is ever since he showed up. He doesn't care about the fact that he has these false starts.
Mm-mm.
Even, like, he's trying to make this... he tries to make this argument after this last game that it's about how he wiggles his ankle and sometimes officials give allow it. I'm watching the game. I'm like, dude, this had nothing to do. This was not one of those.
You're just leaving early.
Yeah, it wasn't one of these moments where he left like a millisecond before the snap and maybe there's some judgment involved. No, nobody else was moving. You took a kick step. You know, it's just this was not a photo finish type of false start call, either of them. And then he's just lazy. I mean, he's just lazy.
Yeah.
And he has no appetite for run blocking. It's just astounding. Yeah. Obviously, Blake Fisher was drafted because they want to replace...
Long-term, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe short-term, who knows?
He can't be the guy moving forward. Yeah, I think it's... This is... I hate to put it in the Jose Abreu category because Jose Abreu at least tried.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jose Abreu felt... I don't know if embarrassment or humiliation is the right term, but you could tell that it weighed heavily on Jose Abreu.
Yeah.
That he was not the player that people expected him to be.
Went to the rookie complex to try to get it fixed.
Laremy Tunsil just checks his bank account and realizes, like, oh, no, I'm everything I need to be.
Yeah.
My bank account is inflated. That's good. Yep, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do.
Yep. Well, we'll get to D'Amico talking about Laremy and talking about the offensive line in the next segment. Also, an update on Yordan Alvarez, and I am not feeling good about this. I will tell you that right now. We'll get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we'll get to D'Amico Ryan's press conference yesterday. He had a lot to say about the offensive line play on Sunday and moving forward. We'll get to that. Probably the biggest concern right now, maybe for me in Houston sports, is this Yordan Alvarez knee injury, whatever it is. Not a ton of clarity on what it is. It sounds like it's a knee sprain, but as far as how long he's going to be out for, he suffered it sliding into second base over the weekend. Here are two Joe Espotica. By the way, the Astros lose 6-1 to the Mariners last night, so we're still waiting. Champagne is still on ice. We have not gotten a division championship celebration yet.
The Calebs let us down last night.
Two Calebs.
With a C, yeah. Caleb with a C and Caleb with a K. Caleb Ferguson and Caleb Ort just came in and destroyed all of Hunter Brown's good work. After six innings of one-run baseball, they just decided to make everything more dramatic as we go down the stretch here.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm least worried about. Like, we got Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez and Yusei Kikuchi. We're ready to go starting pitching-wise. As far as Yordan goes, because I think they're going to clinch the division at some point. Fromber's going tonight, so hopefully tonight is the night that they clinch this thing. And then you can start to get things set up for what looks to be a wild card round, because I don't think they're catching the Guardians. Here's Joe Espada before the game. Yordan Alvarez was going in at 3 o'clock today, to get an MRI. And so here was Joe Espada talking right around that time to the media yesterday.
So, you know what? He's actually right now getting more tests done. He's got an MRI start at 3 o'clock, so we should be getting some more results here in the next hour. Yesterday we, got some x-rays and there was some inflammation in the area. So we want to make sure that we go in there and and we check all the boxes. So he's getting some extra testing done right now. I spoke with him this morning, and you know, he woke up pretty sore. I was expecting him to, you know, praying that he felt better, but that wasn't the case. So, you know, we'll see once we get these results. Once he walks in here.
All right, that was before the game. Now here, after the MRI at 3 o'clock yesterday, here was Joe Espada after the game last night with an 8-second update on Yordan Alvarez.
Right knee sprained.
What is his prognosis for the remainder of the regular season?
He will not be available for this series.
Okay, so not available for the Mariners series. So if they're going to clinch the division, they're going to do it without their best offensive player, Yordan Alvarez.
This is already turning into something that it feels like much more than just a simple contusion, right? Either a bone,
considering
the bone bruise or something like that. As the Astros will try to figure out from their Soviet-produced 40-year-old MRI machine that they have, what was the name of the car back in the Soviet Union? Was it the Gaz or something like that? They don't know what they're doing. So this could be a week. This could be 3 years. We have no clue at this point.
I just look at who the player is. Okay, yeah. This is why I'm not going to beat a dead horse. This is why I get nervous anytime Yordan Alvarez gets involved in any kind of hard contact with a wall, with a base, with the ground, with another player. This is why I say things about Yordan that sound a little silly, because his tolerance for hard contact and injury is a little silly. I will point out that in 2022, the year they won the World Series, he missed several games down the stretch because of a hand injury. He missed a bunch of games last year with an oblique injury, a bunch of games. He only played like 115 games in 2023, because a lot of them he missed because of an oblique injury. He had a mysterious neck injury that kept him out for a four-game or five-game stretch earlier this year. Remember, like, oh, yeah, you were to, and he's in the dugout, and he's just hanging out in there, and he's laughing, but he's got a neck injury. You know, neck.
I always used to say I'm glad that they didn't play American football in Cuba, because then the Astros, Yordan would have had a hell of a tight end or outside linebacker or something.
Dude.
No, he would have been like Lonnie Ballantyne. It would have been like this guy that you knew had great potential, but he was injured all the time. Remember Lonnie Ballantyne?
I do.
Mr. Irrelevant.
Mr. Irrelevant. Yeah,
we'd
back
see him
in
camp and he'd be like, man, this guy is talented.
Guy.
Whoa,
Ballantyne.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But he was just always injured.
Yeah.
By the way, though, I don't know. I never know whether you're exaggerating or not.
What's that?
Because when you say that Yordan should only have base hits or home runs, like what was he supposed to do in that double? He should have slid in that situation.
No, he shouldn't have. There was nobody standing next to the base.
But the ball was coming in. There's a chance he could have gotten tagged as the ball was.
I got to go back and watch. I got to go back and watch.
The
guy wasn't even on the base preparing to catch the ball.
Right, but he caught it like as Yordan was going by him. He couldn't
For a normal player, then sliding is no problem. Yordan. The reason I say these things is because Yordan is different. He's different. He clearly has a lower tolerance. His body has a lower tolerance for that type of stuff. So am I being tongue-in-cheek when I say he should just get singles and home runs? Sure. Am I being tongue-in-cheek when I say he shouldn't slide into second base on plays like that where there's really like a 10% chance of you getting tagged out? I'm dead serious about that.
I would say at third base, when Gary Pettis can give him the slide or no slide, maybe Gary Pettis should be, you know, obviously very, very careful about it.
Yes.
Second base, it's all up to Yordan's judgment. And I don't know if I want him making any more judgment than he already is or is not necessarily. And whether he could just as easily get injured by trying not to slide as by sliding.
That's fair. He gets injured doing anything. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to accept that. All right, man. This is just who he is. Look, it was smart for him to sign the extension he did. It was smart for the Astros to give him that extension because his injuries are always going to be an issue.
Yeah.
Because it's not even, you know, he doesn't seem like one of these guys that needs to switch up his regimen or anything. I think he's just built that way.
Yeah.
That his injuries are always going to be an issue.
Yeah. I mean, history is on my side in how I feel about this. Like, he's suffered a lot of injuries that seem like petty. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's a hand. It's an oblique. Oh, it's an oblique. He's out 3 months, you know?
Like,
so I think, And it's not even an insult to Jordan. Some people are just built a little differently, but you're absolutely right. If he had tried football, he'd have been out after the first week. I'm going to get back to baseball.
It's a bad look for Cuba.
It is. It is.
I'm going to stop being so pro-Cuba all the time. Take down all my Castro posters, everything. Yep. My God. Whatever that shirt. What was the shirt Colin Kaepernick wore? I bought like 10 of those things. Wear them all the time.
Take them to Goodwill.
Going to various rallies and whatnot. No more. Nope. It's made me rethink this whole communism thing.
Someone said, I love how Pendergast is yelling and Seth is the calm one during this segment. It's because I'm dead serious about Jordan and all the plays that are injury inducing with him. Let's get to D'Amico.
I take that as an extreme insult that somebody's like, wait a second, extremely irrational, hyperbolic take? That sounds like a Seth thing. Okay.
Let's get to D'Amico Ryans. This is D'Amico Ryans yesterday, a little Q&A with the media on the slew of formation penalties that they had on Sunday.
With the penalties of lining up, right, we have to be better. We have to align right. You know, it's clear with the rules of how we should line up, so we have to line up correctly, and that starts with us.
The different penalties and the illegal formation penalty that you all have occurred, as well as some of the leaks in allowing pressure to get to CJ's crowd.
Yeah, we go to the drawing board and we fix it. We have to line up right, which I know we can do. We have to line up right, and we have to protect as best we can up front. There's five guys just working together. Or if it's six, we have six guys in particular. We all have to work well together, and we have to play relentless. We have to swarm up front, and we have to get the guys blocked.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know how much progress they can make when, honestly, your alpha in that room is Laremy Tunsil. And there's just so many examples of Laremy Tunsil when he allows guys to make tackles based off of nothing but sheer laziness at times. When he's on the backside of a play, he does the bare minimum. And sometimes the guy, he doesn't even attempt to block a guy that ends up making the tackle on the cutback lane or something. This is in the run game. And so what do they do? What do they do in meetings? I mean, do they hold them accountable for that? What kind of example is being set for the younger guys when the highest paid guy on the team doesn't practice, just doesn't care? I mean, he plays in such a way that it looks like he doesn't care. And you're telling the young guys, like, hey, no, you've got to play your ass off and know your responsibilities and assignments and actually give a damn. We'll let Laremy sit out for the next couple days. And don't worry. We'll probably, got to be careful what you say to Laremy. Don't correct Laremy too harshly.
Those players you're talking about elected him captain.
Exactly. They elected him captain. Exactly, because they don't know any better, man.
Right,
they
right.
just don't know any better.
So,
and that's a problem. That's a problem.
So these questions kept getting asked yesterday to D'Amico about the formation penalties and correcting them, and D'Amico's just going to give generic answers about correcting. We need to correct it. We need to do it better. Blah blah blah. I'll give credit to John McClain. He finally invoked Laremy Tunsil by name in a question,
yeah.
And here was John asking about Laremy Tunsil.
You have to practice with Laremy out of here. Practice
in
lining up, or is he just supposed to know where he lines up?
Yeah, we know where the line. He knows where to align, and we just have to do a better job of getting it done.
Okay, John tried.
Titus's alignment where wasn't nearly as egregious. I could see where Titus might have been frustrated in his penalty. I mean, Laremy was out there in outer space on at least one of the ones that they called on him, and then just not checking with the officials in general and having communications with them. That should be your standard operating procedure here. Is that
the coaching point here? Is that something you can at least bring up in a meeting? Like, hey,
yeah, that's
every
a week
play.
To week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially because this crew, the lead official, Clint Bleakman there, that was the same crew as on the opening game of the season where they were hyper-vigilant about
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's something, and I'll put that on D'Amico, too. Like, that's something you got to be aware of going into this game, that this is a crew that you want to be sure that you're talking to them, that you're checking, you know, you're checking with the official as you're lining up, all of that. And the Texans seem to have been completely caught by surprise by it. It's just simply... there's no excuse for it. There's just no excuse for it. Maybe in week one there's an excuse for it. There's no excuse for, after the third game in the season, the offensive line talking after the game like, golly, did you see what they're doing now with the illegal formations?
The problem was that the offensive line, Laremy Tunsil in particular, took it next level and made it seem like they were being singled out for it. They're making us an example here.
The guy who's been penalized more for false starts than anybody else in the last several seasons somehow thinks that the issue is that they're being targeted.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they're watching you, Laremy. You know why? Because you're really, really bad at this. You're one of the you're the league's worst at not getting flagged. You're absolutely horrendous at it. And you show no actual commitment to the run game whatsoever. It's really bad, man. I you know what? All the listeners who would say that you and I haven't been harsh enough about this are 100% correct. You're right. I've been a way too lenient with D'Amico and Nick Caserio, and it's trying to establish this swarm mentality that you're allowing this cancer to exist on your team. You know what you're doing? You're somebody that's completely foregoing any kind of advice from your doctors on cancer treatment and saying that, and instead calling a psychic up on a 1-900 line. You're like, no, I'm going to let Lady Cleo handle this one. All right, we won't worry about the cancer because we've got Lady Cleo on our side.
Hey, can I read you a quote? I'll let you guess who this quote is from. Laremy, he's played very well, but he's had too many penalties. He would be the first one to tell you that. We've got to try to fix it. We've got to continue to try to help him fix it. I think nobody feels worse about that than him. He's a great guy. He's a great player, but we've got to fix that. End quote.
Yeah. I have to credit Paul Gallant on that quote because he went back and dug up the Bill O'Brien quote.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Paul went back and found the the quote on how bad Laremy's penalties have been back in what year was that? 2018?
It was December 8th, 2019. I just googled you were talking. I googled 2019 Tunsil false starts just to validate that this is something that's been going on a while. And this is the article that came up December 8th.
Oh, okay. I sent that to you late last
you
night.
You did?
When,
okay. I may have been in
you
bed.
You didn't see it yet.
Yeah,
okay.
I didn't see that. Yeah. I saw. I just googled it now, and it says Texans coach. The headline: Texans coach Bill O'Brien. We have to fix Laremy Tunsil's penalties.
Yeah, it's.
Went Paul Wayne got that.
I went. You know what? I went and I just did like a 15-minute live stream on my YouTube channel after the show, and it's funny because you know people like non-Texans fans that watch that video were like really PO'd about. A, the Vikings fans were upset that I wasn't acknowledging the Vikings and their greatness. Like, all right, well, that's not going to happen. But people were like, why are you fixated on this? Like, obviously, there was other stuff that went on in the game. Texans fans were, like, almost unanimous. Like, hell yes, that's what you should be talking about.
This is
you don't understand, if you're not from Houston, the misery that we've had the entire time Laremy Tunsil has been here with how sloppy and inattentive to detail he is when it comes to penalties. And it all came back to roost, man. It all came back to roost. If you want to be a great team, you've got one of the highest paid guys on your team just flat out does not care.
Doesn't care. Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. We'll get to the Texans. D'Amico Ryan's on bouncing back from a big loss. The Astros last night, they'll get another crack at trying to clinch the division. Tonight, after losing last night, we'll get to that. Monday Night Football, doubleheader, some injury news around the NFL. Got a lot to get to in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Let's get to it. Today's headline. Let's start with the Texans. We'll get to the Astros in a second. D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday. What's he learned about bouncing back from losses in his time as a head coach?
For myself, what I learned, I just tell the truth. Like, I just put the film up and I tell the truth of so guys can actually see what happened and why we lost the game. And everybody, would like to blame, you know, one person or put it in one person, but I show everybody that it's not just one play, it's not just one person, it's not just one thing. It's a collection of a lot of different things that had to go bad for you to lose a game. Now it's all about each man owning up to it and fixing it the next week so the same thing doesn't happen again.
Okay. Well, at least two of those men were pointing fingers at the officials after the game. They were victims in all this.
And you know, Laremy Tunsil, honestly, I'll go straight to the Jose Abreu example of it. Sometimes it's more than just the one part, you know, and however much that weighs into the sum of all parts. Abreu, to his credit, and this is where I feel bad for Abreu and even making the comparison between Jose Abreu and Laremy Tunsil. Jose Abreu at least felt bad about it. Jose Abreu at least knew that it was a bad situation. Laremy Tunsil sets such a bad example for your young offensive linemen, in his inattention to detail, in his complete and total lack of any commitment to doing things the right way, to really seemingly only caring about pass blocking and his bank account, that, man, it is very much a barrier to actually capitalizing on all of the talent you have on that team. Because, Sean, I mean, so many examples in that game of him just not caring on the run. He just stands there and lets defenders run to the running back on run plays on the backside because he just doesn't feel like blocking for more than 2 or 3 seconds. He's got a very his mentality is very much like, I did the right thing for 2 seconds. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not on me anymore.
Right.
And then he just lets guys run past him.
Yeah. No question.
So that's not even the injury. I mean, that's not even the penalties we're talking about. But it is that same. It's that same carelessness where he just does not care. He's going to have false starts, and he just does not care. Leave the whole illegal formation stuff out of it. I mean, he had 2 false starts in that game that were drive killers, and he doesn't care.
That's the big thing. They're drive killers. You know, three of the penalties he had in the first half came on third down, 2 of which negated big chunk plays that would have gotten first downs. The other one pushed them out of field goal range. Like, I don't know what the analytics say he cost them in terms of points, but in a game where you're trailing 7-0 and 14-0 for most of the first half,
yeah,
he if there were a gateway to get to the chance for points, he basically just walked up to the gate and locked it, put 3 padlocks on it. You know what I mean? Like, hey, did Laremy Tunsil lose the game for the Texans? No. They lost 34-7. Did Laremy Tunsil negate any chance of the Texans putting pressure, game pressure, on the Vikings in the first half? Hell yeah, he did. Hell yeah, he did.
Yeah, and there's honestly, the offensive line run blocking in general, they showed potential in week one. And remember, we talked about it. They showed a lot of potential in week one. There were still a lot of things that I was pointing out that they needed to clean up. They've regressed. I mean, their zone blocking, the thing that's supposed to be the staple of this team that sets up the passing game and everything, it's really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really bad. They've just got so many miscues, missteps, poor technique, everything along the line that if you're going to live in this world this year where teams are just going to say, all right, we're going to do everything we can to take away these top 3 receivers or limit them, the answer to that is, whether you're old school football or analytic dude or anything else, is to run the football. And they are completely inept in that right now. It's and I like, this can't be just, oh, we stay the course, we do everything that D'Amico is saying that they'll do. Laremy Tunsil has shown no evidence of being a guy that will respond to any of that. And I think that filters down to the rest of the guys on that team. It's really frustrating. It's really frustrating.
All right, let's get to the Astros. They were frustrating last night. They lost to the Mariners 6-1. The magic number to clinch the division remains 2. That's a combination of Astro wins and Mariner losses that clinch you the division. The good news is you play the Mariners the next two days, so you got 2 more chances to clinch the division. And they better get it done in these next couple days, because then you go to Cleveland to face them for 3 games, and the Mariners play the A's. So if you want to feel a little bit of angst going into the last weekend of the season, the Astros are on the verge of possibly making that happen. You got Framber Valdez going tonight, so you feel pretty good about your chances there. The big thing right now is Yordan Alvarez in this knee injury. Because even if you clinch the division and go to the postseason, you ain't going nowhere without Yordan Alvarez. Here was the prognosis after the MRI yesterday afternoon. Here's what the diagnosis from Joe Espada.
Right knee sprained.
What is his prognosis for the remainder of the regular season?
He will not be available for this series.
Okay, not available for this series. I would say, too, Seth, the other thing this does, and this is problematic for the Astros if it's a knee sprain, is that maybe he gets back, but he can only DH. That all of a sudden takes some flexibility out of your lineup. That forces you come postseason, and I know I'm getting way out in front here, but we're talking about a guy where injuries seem to linger longer with this guy than they do with other guys. So let's play it forward here. If Yordan is taking up the DH spot, that means you're having to play one of these guys in left field that is a subpar offensive play. You can't do the thing where you get Yordan in left field and you can DH, you can rejigger some things with Yiner and Caratini and get better bats in the lineup and whatnot. Yordan in any capacity in the lineup is a must for the postseason, but that's something to keep an eye on. Is his knee going to be good enough to where he can run around in the outfield?
Well, yeah, and a sprain a sprain is a ligament, you know, so and sometimes people use sprained as an all-encompassing. A sprain is a ligament, and sometimes it's something you can play through, if it's an MCL or something, but sometimes it's a torn ACL, sometimes it's whatever. So this does put it into the category of, all right, chances better than not that Yordan is going to end up being full-time DH through the playoffs.
Yeah.
There's a chance. There's a very good chance of that, or he might not be available at all.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is a... It escalated very quickly. Which is not a surprise.
No.
I'm not saying I expected it to escalate very quickly, but this isn't a surprise, but it's very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and none of Joe Espada's media availability since that slide have indicated a manager that's super optimistic about the future of this injury here. You know,
even if he were super optimistic, we know that
we can't believe it. Great point. Yeah, Monday Night Football last night, real quick, because we got to get to Ross Tucker. Buffalo 47, Jacksonville 10 in a battle of the Texans' next two opponents. The Jags, of course, coming up this weekend. Buffalo the following weekend. Ross was at that game. Ross was doing Westwood 1 coverage for that game here on Sports Radio 610. We'll talk about that game with him in just a minute or two, or about 5 minutes. Washington 38, Cincinnati 33. The Bengals a very unlikely 0-3 to start the season. As far as injuries around the NFL go, Sam Darnold, no structural damage to his knee from the Danielle Hunter hit to his legs on Sunday against the Texans. Javon Hargrave goes on IR for the 49ers with a triceps tear. Christian McCaffrey is now headed to Germany to have somebody look at his Achilles over in Germany. So take that.
Yeah. Wow.
Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, get whatever amped up treatment they have over there experimentally. Hey, we've only done this on monkeys.
Yeah.
And Christian McCaffrey.
Go
do that.
Our baseball talk this segment is presented by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro. Up next, our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. We'll get his thoughts on last night's Monday night game, which he was in attendance at, Buffalo and Jacksonville. We'll get his thoughts on offensive line play and trying to fix formation penalties and false starts. Where would Ross Tucker go with the Laremy Tunsil situation? We'll get to that coming up next.